Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a space for those who are healing from complex and developmental trauma. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach, survivor, and thriver. The intent of the podcast is to provide helpful information with insight that can validate, encourage, and support you on your healing journey. You're going to hear stories from other survivors and trauma experts, featuring therapists, coaches, and practitioners. We will open up the conversation on effective trauma healing modalities, practices, and tools. If you are interested in trauma recovery coaching, as well as recommended books and healing resources, head over to www.thehealingtraumapodcast.com. And now, here is your host, Monique Coven.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. On today's episode, I'm going to be talking with Erica Hornthal. And Erica is a licensed clinical professional counselor and a board-certified dance and movement therapist. She's also the author of a new book called Body Aware. One of the things she has in her book that I really like are little takeaways, and there was something that I wanted to share that I wrote down. And it says, when you've been wired to live in your mind, it's both scary and liberating to think, challenge, and explore what lives in your body. That is so true. It is like a foreign place. We don't quite know how to relate to our body. And yet, this is where we live and move and where there's life. Our life force lives in there. And so I hope that today's conversation will be interesting to you in that you will be able to find some little, even little glimmers of ways that you can begin to see how you can start to move and connect with your own body. So now, on to the episode. Hi, Erica. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I think we met on Instagram, and I was always really interested in your work because you're a therapist. You talk about movement. And then I found out you wrote this book called Body Aware, and anything somatic, like my ears perk up because I know how much the body has to be involved when it comes to healing trauma, working with trauma. So this is new for me, and maybe even for the audience, in terms of exactly what you do, in that you are a therapist, but you're a, well, I like the term that you use on Instagram, the therapist who moves you. So you're a dance movement therapist. So does that mean are you also a licensed therapist, or are you a dance movement therapist that's a licensed therapist? Like, explain it to us. What is dance and movement therapy?
Sure. So I think the formal definition that you might find on the internet is the psychotherapeutic use of movement to integrate social, emotional, cognitive, physical, even spiritual parts of an individual. I like to break it down a little more than that because I've recognized that not everybody gets what psychotherapy is. Not everybody understands integration. So I like to put it in these terms that most of our communication is nonverbal. And yet when we are going through something difficult, especially emotionally, we're always told to talk about it. But I mean, we know when trauma is involved, those parts of our brain go offline. And then what about the rest of the body, right? The nonverbal communication that's housing and holding on to the experiences. To me, dance movement therapy is about working with and bringing forward all of the communication that is happening within the therapeutic relationship. So movement is not just what you do, it's who you are. It's how you express yourself. It's how you move. It's how you behave. A lot of it's unconscious. A lot of it's involuntary. And to answer your first part of that question, so I am a board certified dance therapist, but depending on where you practice really dictates what other certifications or requirements you need. So I practice in Chicago, in Illinois. I'm in Chicago. And in order to be a private practitioner in psychotherapy, I have to be a licensed professional counselor or a social worker. I happen to be a clinical professional counselor. So I have the counseling license. I have my master's and board certification in dance therapy. And it's kind of the marriage of the two that makes it all work together.
Oh, wow. So I'm so interested in what that looks like. So maybe we'll start with, why is movement so important in healing trauma?
I think to piggyback off of this idea that most of our communication is nonverbal, also the fact that we know when trauma is present or the wounds of trauma are present, there are certain parts of us that are disintegrated, mm-hmm. right? Or have been kind of shut off to preserve, to survive. And I always see movement as the way in. You know, movement is a guide as to what's happening in this moment. It's also a great way to notice what I'm not aware of in the moment. How is my body showing up? How are the movements that I do contributing to survival versus thrival? You know, I see movement as, I mean, you know, it's been said before, it's kind of a metaphor for life, you know? So it's not just how much you're moving. It's how you're moving. It's how well you're moving, even how aware you are of your movement. And if we want to change our minds, right? If we want to change our behaviors and the thoughts that contribute to the behaviors, I think it's vital that we look at how our bodies contribute to those thoughts, how the way we move creates what we think and how we feel.
So can you give us some examples of what, like, so we can have an example of what you're talking about in terms of, let's say, someone who has experienced trauma? How would you say you might see them moving, for example?
Sure. I mean, obviously it is very dependent on the individual. One of the examples I like to give, or kind of the questions I like to put out there, is, have you ever met someone who's really flexible in their body, but very inflexible in their mind? Right. So someone who, and I don't just mean like somebody that does a split, right? But someone who maybe exudes kind of loosey goosey, right? Takes up a lot of space, maybe takes up too much space, right? Kind of invades people's space, but has a very type A personality.
Yeah.
Not really. Those things don't tend to go hand in hand unless there's a conscious effort, right? So again, it's kind of this idea of, how has the internal, like as Matei would say, right? Like these internal woundings, how has my trauma impacted the way I move? And so is it keeping me confined? Am I closed off? Mm-hmm. Am I afraid to get too close to people? Am I fearful of being open and vulnerable? Because that plays a role in literally how my posture, how my body shows up in certain spaces. Maybe I do the opposite and I puff out my chest and I over exude confidence, right? So that people don't feel or see the insecurity, right? The shamefulness, the blaming. It's not one way to be, right? But it's just recognizing that it's not just mindset. And if I'm having a really hard time getting into the mindset or feeling really stuck in my mind, then maybe I can start looking at how my body is showing up in these places, right? So whether it's a really, what we call like a big T or a little T trauma, it all impacts the body, you know? So just looking at the way we move, the nuances, the qualities, the characteristics of our movement can not only be an indicator, right, of what has occurred, but it can also be kind of a gateway into using the body to help support those changes we want to see.
Okay. So what do you mean when you, like, you titled your book to be body aware, well, body aware, and this mind-body connection. What do you mean by body aware, to be body aware?
Body aware to me is focusing, paying attention, honing in on the senses, mm-hmm. right? The actual visceral feelings in the body, to then understand what's happening in the mind, right? So becoming more aware of the embodiment of how my body is showing up, of what I'm feeling in my body, to then support my mental health, right? Whether it's just noticing this is how I'm feeling and this is how it shows up in my body, or mm-hmm. right, to notice what's happening in my body and make the connection to how I feel, right? Mm-hmm. Or how that contributes to what I feel. So for me, it was kind of that deeper, it's not just body awareness, right? It's not just being aware of my body in space or the feel of my body, but it's actually connecting mind and body. When I'm more aware of what's happening and sensing in the body, I can then start to look at how that plays out in the mind and yes. overall mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that that is part of when we're healing trauma, it's coming back into those things, those, how we've shut off a lot of that because we're not used to feeling because feeling didn't feel very good. So I really like that.
And it's not easy, right? Because so many of us experience trauma in or to the body.
Yeah.
So to just say, okay, let's go into the body. Yeah. It's like, no, thank you.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Why would I relive that?
Yeah.
So it's also about understanding that, you know, body, the language of body is sensation. And we can use the senses, right? We can use external senses to help bring us into the body, into a relationship that feels, I want to say safe, but that's kind of that's right. Like that's a different word. It means something different to everybody, but just almost a way to befriend the body, right? To be curious about what's happening without judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is something people don't know about trauma and the body, would you say?
So I know that, we know the body keeps the score, yeah. right? That's not new. And yet such an important conversation, right? I find what a lot of people don't know or what's missing from the conversation is actually that our body, like our movement patterns, the mm-hmm. things that we develop as we grow, even in just the first 2 years of life, that when we are triggered, we can revert back to early developmental movement patterns. This is something that was explored by Peggy Hackney, explored by Irmgard Bartenieff, that, you know, much like you can feel like you're acting or you can witness someone kind of acting younger than they are, mm-hmm. right? We say that oftentimes the age at which the trauma occurred tends to be how we operate, right? It can be like mm-hmm. how we manage or mismanage mm-hmm. the world, right? Ourselves in that moment. But also we have to recognize that those patterns in our body become very young too. And so it doesn't mean that all of a sudden you're going to start crawling around like a baby, but advanced patterns in our movements that also help us speak our needs, set boundaries, create limits, those go offline too. And we may find it hard to speak what we need. We may find it hard to set a boundary or to be with others, right? All of a sudden we are just very internal mm-hmm. and almost at times it can feel, you know, almost like toddlerhood. It can kind of feel like infantile. Not again in how we're speaking, but literally how our body is feeling. We lose these really advanced patterns because we're reverting back to those earlier patterns of the trauma.
Wow. Well, when you, as a dance therapist and movement therapist, how would you normally begin with someone who comes in and maybe they've had developmental trauma?
Mm-hmm. 88% of the work week is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
Believe it or not, I start with all of my clients, regardless of how they identify or what they're coming in with, pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. And so, because while some people are very aware of trauma or their history with trauma, I would say a lot of my clients aren't. You know, they know that they're looking to change something, or they have, you know, really debilitating anxiety, mm-hmm. As an example. They don't always know that it's tied to trauma.
Right.
So this understanding that we want to be compassionate, we want to be gentle, but I kind of want to start on an even playing field, because we don't know what's going to happen when we, you know, kind of open up the body, so to speak. So I talk about this in the book, actually. One of the things I like to start with is just asking someone, how are you moving? How are you moving today? You know, just like you would ask someone, how are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, and it's interesting, the connections or the assumptions that we make, the judgments we make, like, oh, I didn't get to the gym, so mm-hmm. I haven't really moved at all today. I'm like, okay, that's good. That's good information. It's good to know that that's how you equate movement. But let's talk about, like, how are you posturing? How are you gesturing in this moment? How is the physical shape of your body showing up? Are you open? Are you closed? Are you slow? Are you fast? You know, these qualities of movement are so important. So oftentimes I start with a conversation around that. If the person is open to it, we'll do a little kind of like emotional mapping, right? Thinking of a circumstance, you know, kind of low on the scale, right? Nothing too overwhelming. And just helping somebody, I start to identify, where do these things connect? Where do I feel my fear? Where do I feel my joy? Where do I feel my anger? Mostly, you know, guided by them, right? Like, what are emotions that you feel are prevalent? Where do you feel those? And sometimes that's a little too much, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Then we'll also start with just kind of basic dimensional movements, right? So whether it's a movement assessment scale, or some people will call it like a dimensional scale from Rudolf Laban's work. I love to bring people into these dimensions just so that they can start to feel, one, what's familiar to them, right? Where do I feel more comfortable moving? Am I more comfortable staying to myself? Am I more comfortable reaching up or down versus out or in? And what do I start to notice about my own movement habits? You know, and talking about it, sometimes it feels like, okay, does that really work? But it's amazing when you get someone into the experience, things just start to flow. You know, someone will almost always say, oh, this feels familiar, right? It's not comfortable, but it's familiar. And I don't want to move this way anymore, but this is a habit, right? This is how I move all the time. And I think that this might be contributing to what I'm experiencing. So we look beyond those. Can we try other dimensions, right? Can we play with the spectrum? Can we play with the timing, the rhythm? That oftentimes is the first one, maybe even two sessions. We're just starting to assess and meet our body where it is in the movement that it's accustomed to.
This is so interesting, so mm-hmm. different from what probably people think about when they think about going for support for trauma. Yeah, my first response was I was wondering, how do they respond to, I mean, I know they're seeing you, knowing there's the word movement in your title. So, you know, it's not that much of a surprise, but that, you know, getting them right away into that connection with how they're, what's happening, how they're moving, and all of that. That's, anyway, so interesting.
If you'd like to find out more about trauma recovery coaching with me, you can visit my website at thehealingtraumapodcast.com. There you'll find a variety of ways that we could work together.
How can movement trigger someone? Mm.
So again, I think that there are obviously many ways that this can happen. You know, not only is it someone moving you, right? Someone bumps into you, or someone pushes you, someone touches you, right? Like, these are obviously ways that we can be triggered by movement. But I think what we don't really understand is, or we don't think about is the fact that some of the ways I exercise can actually perpetuate a lot of the emotional trauma that continues to surface. Again, without kind of this dialogue of mindfulness during movement or intentional movement or even redefining what movement is, you know, we tend to focus it on certain exercises because maybe physically it's good for us, but oftentimes it can perpetuate a fight or flight response, right? I've had plenty of clients that who do identify with trauma, you know, they've heard, they've read, right, that yoga can be very good, right? It's something that they should explore. And whether it's trauma informed or not, it can often be a very, very scary experience and they don't go back to it. And so I like to, you know, kind of inquire, talk a little bit about that. But I think what needs to be recognized is when we move more, we feel more. And that if we're not used to moving in certain ways, even as gentle an approach as it may be, we can open ourselves up to feeling things that we haven't felt in a long time, or we're not open to feeling. And that can be really scary. And so even again, the most mindful, soft, gentle, meditative movement I've seen can be very triggering to people. And so you just have to be very intentional with how you approach it. I always say it's not just the movement, it's the intervention. It's like, it's the intention and the gentleness with which we, I guess, kind of engage in that movement. So it's not one way to move. It's not about avoiding that movement. It's just really, again, I like to use the word curious, being curious of, why do I continue to engage in that movement? Does it serve me? What can I change about it? You know, or what other movements can I add in that might help me regulate my nervous system instead of, again, perpetuate these fight or flight feelings?
It's so interesting that you're saying that because I used to do aerobics and all that kind of classes. And as I became more trauma-informed, I just started to notice that I wasn't really enjoying it as much. And I had a feeling that it's because of the feeling of the, you know, when a little bit of the fight and flight starting to happen, and it wasn't so fun. So, you know, this period in my life, I'm doing all, you know, Tai Chi and yoga, and it's totally different. It's really wonderful. But that is so interesting what you're saying about how it can trigger us. Is there anything that you, like, how would you work with that? Like, would you, if somebody has a traumatic response, let's say, to a certain trigger, what would be your intervention for that?
Well, again, I think it's about exploring the spectrum and also recognizing, like, what is it about the movement that I resonate with? You know, so again, just going back to those assessments kind of, right, of what are the planes of movement that I enjoy? You know, what are the ways in which I move that are accommodating, right? That are also habitual. So I have a lot of clients, like one of the planes that we'll explore is called sagittal. It's kind of like, it's a forward and back, just like a wheel, right? It's called also called the wheel plane. So just like a wheel would roll forward and backward. I've had a lot of clients identify that the moving forward is very familiar, but it's not necessarily something that they want. It's kind of something that's been conditioned, right? It's the go, 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 the do, do, do. As long as I keep going and doing, I don't have to be still. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like, well, what happens when we're still, right? Can we be still? Ooh, I don't know, right? Because in the stillness is when the worry comes in, the anxiety, the thoughts. But if I keep going and I keep moving, right? Keep going forward. So sometimes that alone, you know, I'll have the person like, well, keep walking forward, right? Can we slow down the walk forward? Can we, you know, can we pivot, right? Because it's literally a dance move. As you pivot, you're still walking forward, but you're transitioning.
Yeah.
You're using this movement as a metaphor, right? Then I'll have clients like, can you bring in another direction, right? I'm not going to tell you which way to move, but can you invite in another direction? So maybe we start to move sideways. Maybe we do start to move backwards. And so it's really inviting in these other ways of movement. Again, realizing that maybe some of the ways that I exercise, mm-hmm. I do because it perpetuates a feeling, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plenty of people run because it releases endorphins and it feels good. And they get into like that zone or that flow. But I know a lot of people that run because they continue to run from something, mm-hmm. right? It's that adrenaline. It's that rush. And that can be good and bad, right? It's not here to judge it, but are we aware, you know, do we notice why we engage in certain movements? And can we expand our repertoire? Can we bring in something else? So maybe I run, maybe I do high interval training, but then I also slow it down and I bring in some Tai Chi or I bring in some yoga or just a gentle walk around the block. That's how you build a more robust nervous system, right? Instead of just the same habit over and over again, because sometimes it's just perpetuating, like you said, that fight or flight response without us even realizing it.
I love that, that robust nervous system. You're talking about resilience. So can you talk to us about how you would help someone to build up their resilience, or I guess you could also say widen their window of tolerance, you know, at the same time?
Yeah. So I love, you know, Siegel's talk about tolerance, the window of tolerance. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily identify with the coming back to a baseline. I always think of it as an expansion. And so if we can kind of widen the window, right, we can, in a healthy way, tolerate the fluctuations. And so one way that I've noticed over time for myself, but also with my clients, is that when we build a more robust movement vocabulary, mm-hmm. right? So I increase the ways that I can move, the awareness around my movement, again, the nuances, I can move fast, I can move slow, I can sustain, I can rise, I can fall, all these different qualities. I build a more, I hate to use the word resilient because that's what we're kind of defining, but I build a more, I build a system that can better flow with things that come at it, right? So it's like if you're walking down the street and someone bumps into you, right? That's enough to jar a lot of us, mm-hmm. right? It throws us off kilter. Mm-hmm. Maybe we yell at the person or we cower, right? Is there a way that if someone bumped into me, I just kept moving in that direction, right? I kind of like, okay. And then I got myself back on track, mm-hmm. right? That's kind of the way I see it. So when we build in more movements, when we explore more movements, we have not only the ability to literally move through things, but the mind follows. The mind has more options and choices. So again, it's not how well we're moving. It's not how much we exercise. It's this comprehensive vocabulary, right? It's like building my embodied dictionary. So instead of just moving one or two ways, I end up moving 10 ways, 20 ways, 30 ways, and I build this detour system. So I have more options at my disposal. And in turn, my brain, you know, I build neuroplasticity. I have more neural pathways, more connections. It's embodied resilience, but obviously it translates to like actual, you know, resilience and flexibility of the mind.
Mm. It's just making me think about how important movement is. That's why I was also very attracted to your work, because for trauma survivors, especially those with chronic, experiences of being in overwhelm and wanting to flee, you know, the body wanted to go, to run, to leave, and then it couldn't. Mm-hmm. So there's that experience of stuck over and over again. So the body really has that visceral, that memory of being stuck. And when they feel stuck in their life, it's tied to, you know, the past and those memories of being stuck. So the idea of movement just to me sounds like it's just so logical that our bodies have to move. They have to have those disconfirming experiences of the stuckness, mm-hmm. by moving and moving and moving.
And then we have to start there, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's one of, I think, the misconceptions, right, is that we're going to add movement, but I'm not even looking at adding movement. Mm-hmm. I just want people to recognize the movement that's already there. So mm-hmm. can we kind of be with the stuck, right? Can I notice how that shows up in my body? Because I have to be aware of that before I can actually move from that or move through that. That's why I think sometimes if my body and mind are stuck, and then I look to go take an exercise class, right? Yeah. Or yoga or even Tai Chi, the possibility of movement is pretty limited, right? Unless I meet myself in like, what am I resisting, right? Where's the stuckness? Move through that. And then you find that, well, there's more movement possible now. You know, we just don't look at movement in those ways, you know? So it's kind of, again, as maybe oversimplified as it sounds, like redefining what movement is actually one of the ways that's helped my clients move, literally, right? Like you listen, you look at the stuckness or the freezing, the fleeing, you know, meet yourself in that, experience that, and you might be surprised at the other end of the spectrum, right? What movement is accessible and possible for you.
Yeah, I love that. So what does it mean to ace your mental health?
So I realized that I kept kind of talking about these three points and they created this acronym. So ACE is A-C-E. The A stands for awareness. The C is to challenge or even change. And the E is to expand. So if we're looking to become more body aware, especially with regard to trauma or the wounds of trauma, the first step is to really become aware of my movement in any given moment. Right? Not all the time, but if you have the availability, the possibility, the time to just kind of notice, become aware of how your body is showing up in this moment. It might be when you're feeling really overwhelmed. It might be in, it's hard to do when you're in crisis, but if that's the first time you think of it, then do so. But ultimately, when you're not in crisis, right? When you're feeling more stable or as relaxed as possible, notice how your body is moving. Become aware. The C is to challenge it. So challenge how that part of your body is moving. You know, I use like non-dominant hand often, right? Like, so if I notice I'm writing with my dominant hand, can I change it up? Can I challenge myself by using my other hand? If my legs are crossed, can I uncross them? Mm-hmm. It's really just a challenging the position, you know, noticing how I'm showing up and changing it up, if you will. And then the expansion is just noticing what movement extension is possible from that, you know? So, if I've uncrossed my legs, you know, can I stretch my legs? Maybe I stand up. Again, it feeds into this idea of creating this more robust movement vocabulary. So ultimately I'm a more resilient system. I can access safe ways of moving in as many safe ways as possible. Emily Conrad in Continuum Movement said, you know, the idea is basically to build this robust system that's capable of handling things that come its way. And I agree that like movement is one of, if not the way to do that. So acing our mental health is really about looking the way our movement contributes to our mental health. And so if I'm struggling or feeling overwhelmed, try to focus on the body, become aware, challenge how you're moving, try to expand your movement. And I guarantee something will shift. Something will shift or highlight for your mental health, something that's not working in the moment.
Would you be okay? I know we didn't plan this, but would you be okay with maybe doing a little exercise or giving us a little tool that maybe the listeners could either join along with us here or they could try it on their own?
Oh, sure. I would love that.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to do something very, I believe to be simple, very accessible.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure people listening are not, not new to somatics in the sense of like breathing, right? Stretching. So rather than focus on that, even though I think they're all very important, I write about them extensively. When it comes to this idea of resilience, right? Building in a movement profile, expanding our embodied dictionary, I want anybody listening to make a really tight fist, right? Whichever hand feels better for you, make a tight fist.
I'm doing it with you.
Yeah. And the goal, right, is to go from a closed fist to an open hand, right? This is assuming anybody listening is able to do that. If you're not, then please make adaptations. But this is just one example, right? So we're going to close our fist and the goal is to open our hand nice and wide. And so my intervention for you is find as many ways possible to get to that open palm. And just play, be curious with how I can get to that place. So because you can't necessarily see me, I'm going to kind of talk through what I'm doing. So I can either go from a closed fist to an open hand really fast, mm-hmm. right? Kind of like, fast. I can go from a closed fist to an open hand really slow. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I can go backwards too, right? I can slowly close my hand. Right. You can go one finger at a time. You can reverse that. Again, you can kind of play with the speed. Mm-hmm. And now I'm kind of making a cascading waterfall with my hand. Right. I invite you, you can even use your other hand to open the fingers. Right. And so I always like to use movement as a metaphor. So one, I can look at how speed, right, influences me. Can I go slow as I open my hand? Is that frustrating? Is it hard not to get there immediately? Is my propensity to just open really fast, get there, right? Is it kind of like the jolt or the, right? The metaphor of like, do I need someone else to help me open my hand? How does it feel to have support opening it, right? Is it something I want to do for myself? So again, there's no right way to be. I'm just trying to bring in some metaphorical, you know, what does my movement mean for me? Mm-hmm. So I realize I talked a lot through that, but yeah, just this idea of creating changes in the body and noticing all the movement that's possible. Like that is what helps build that resilient mind.
That's really great.
Yeah. So you can do both hands at the same time. I know they don't work quite the same way, but you can do it with your toes and your feet. You can do it with your whole body, right? Curl your body up into a ball, right? And find as many ways possible as you can to open or stretch or expand your body if that feels safe in the moment. And of course, you can do this by yourself in your room, in your home. Doesn't have to be in the presence of others.
Do you usually work one-on-one or have you also worked with groups?
I do both. Mm-hmm. If it's specifically trauma, like if the person is coming in with understanding a history or like manifestations of trauma, I tend to only work one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Again, obviously there's a school of thought, right? That trauma is experienced by all in some way. The groups that I do are specifically for usually memory care, memory impairment, or some form of dementia, which a diagnosis like that would be trauma for a lot of people. So I think it depends, you know, on what your definition is, how you relate, but I know my own limits. And so again, the group work that I tend to do is with a very specific population. And then if I'm working specifically with trauma and the embodiment of it and kind of repatterning, I feel much more comfortable on a one-on-one.
I'm imagining
in person, sometimes telehealth, but I'm old school. I'd prefer to be in person with people. Yeah. So,
and I imagine they would probably feel better, you know, doing it alone if they have a history of trauma. Cause I think I told you, I saw in our community, we have different activities listed in our community. And of course I noticed right away, they were offering, like a group course in movement and, movement therapy.
Yeah.
And dance movement therapy. And I thought, ooh, interesting. I don't know if I want to be with all those people though, to do it. So,
yeah. You know, and I mean, you bring up a good point that, like dance movement therapy, that specific phrase, I think is more of the field that's, I don't even know if there's necessarily a title protection, but like that's a very specific, again, field, intervention, mm-hmm. you know, movement, dance, the word therapy, any combination of, there's not ownership, right? There isn't necessarily proprietary, it's not proprietary. So I think anybody listening or being more, you know, maybe finding a curiosity, right, around movement therapy, dance therapy, somatic therapy, like just to educate yourself, you know, kind of know that there are lots of different ways that can show up. It doesn't always mean that it's a licensed therapist. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's not what you need. That's mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different services, right, available these days. But I think the common ground is that it's body. You know, there's this awareness that somatics and body is needed. And, you know, depending on what you need, you can kind of notice, create that for yourself, right? If you need a one-on-one with a therapist that's actually going to be able to kind of hold that space for whatever might come out, great. It might just be more of like, I just want an open group experience where I can move and be with other movers.
Yeah.
It's all possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So how can you support resilience through or maybe after someone experiences a traumatic event?
So I don't necessarily subscribe to the like bounce back idea. You know, we tend to hear resilience is bouncing back. Yeah. I think especially when a trauma, right, mm-hmm. is involved, there isn't always a going back, right? It's a going, not always forward either, right? It's a new, right? It's almost kind of new experiencing or a new understanding, right, mm-hmm. of ourselves. So I find that especially from movement, instead of relying on how I used to move, right, continuing to do movement that maybe I experienced pre-trauma, or even like movement that occurred during the trauma, I think it's really important, again, to kind of notice what movement's happening and be curious about what's not happening, right? The parts of my body that either I'm so focused on or the parts of my body that I don't realize or focus on at all, right? They're kind of two ends of the spectrum. And so sometimes trying to find a way somewhere into the middle, right? Outside of just building that more robust vocabulary, because I realize that movement in those ways is not always accessible to someone who is in the throes of that wounding from trauma. And sometimes it takes just any way to externalize what we're experiencing. So recognize that there's movement in, you know, moving to music. There's movement in creating music. There's movement in putting a pen to paper.
Yeah.
That it doesn't have to be dance. It doesn't have to be mm-hmm. exercise. Again, I like this. I subscribe to the idea that movement is in everything. So understand what movement is possible for you and do it. You know, if breathing is too hard to focus on, we know it's happening. Try something different, right? Maybe it's just bringing in the senses. You know, they say that sensation is the language of the body. Mm-hmm. And if you are either going through or have experienced trauma and being with your body is too difficult, but you want to get there, then start with the external. You know, start with smelling a good scent, start with, you know, being mindful of the food that you're tasting, how things feel on your body. You know, maybe it's getting used to taking an indulgent, you know, bath or shower. Mm-hmm. Just start to sense more. And I think that ultimately leads to body, because that is the language, right? That is the language we want to talk to the body with. It also allows the mind to start connecting to the body instead of placing judgment on the body. Mm-hmm. So again, I think that lends itself to just bringing in more and new and different ways of moving, which ultimately leads to that resilience and empathy too, having empathy for yourself, like self-compassion, but also empathy for other people's experiences as well. Right. Cause I mean, we don't all move in the same way. So we can kind of leave room for the fact that my body is mine, yours is yours, and that we're going to have different experiences in it.
So this was so interesting. Is there anything that you want to share before we close? Anything you want to say that you didn't say?
I know we touched on a lot. So, you know, I think that, you know, I just always want to hit home that movement isn't necessarily something we add, right? It's something that's already there. Mm-hmm. And so either if you want to be using the body more, if you want to connect to the body, or if you're feeling like, oh, I know that everybody's saying I should do it, but it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel comfortable. Just starting with what is already happening, you know, just noticing how my body shows up or how I resist it is the way in,
yeah.
You know, and that maybe the goal, and not for everybody, but like if you, you know, if there's social anxiety or something traumatic happened around a certain setting and your goal is to get to a place to work out, take a certain class, then that's fine. But that isn't the only way to be. There's so much movement that has to happen even to get yourself to those environments. You know, I always say, like, think of the movement that has to take place to get yourself to the yoga class. Forget taking yoga.
Yeah.
It's all true. Like, what movement has to happen to just get yourself there?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big transition for some people.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
And I guess lastly, that like, this is possible for anyone and everyone. It doesn't matter how you move. If you have developmental differences or, you know, limitations, or even identify as having disability, like that's the beauty of movement, is because you meet yourself in what is possible, right? Not what is expected by anyone else. So regardless of what is your embodied experience, I would encourage people to just start to redefine movement for themselves and don't let anyone stand in their way when it comes to how they should be moving.
That's really great. Well, thank you. So Erica, I will put your information for your website and your book in case anyone's interested
in
reading it. I will put that in the show notes, and thank you for chatting with us today. It was really interesting.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so appreciative, and anything to help people, you know, connect to, move through and work through trauma, because it's, you know, we all deserve the right to thrive. So.
Absolutely. What was that thing you said? I loved it at the very beginning. You said you had an expression. You said, instead of survival, it's thrive. What did you say? It was wonderful.
Oh, well, we often move to survive, not to thrive.
Yeah, no, it was something else. But anyways, it was like you put a word on thriving. I'll have
thrival?
To listen back.
Thrival?
Yes.
Right.
Rival. I've never heard that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a real word. Maybe I made it up, but makes sense.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
percent of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise Ready AI.